Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This is Hemet.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. If you like what you're listening to, please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. And we have so many different stories to get to today. How are you?
I'm fine. Let's do this.
All right. Do you want to start with something positive for once?
I guess.
We'll do it's that.
Like, that's not really our brand, but I suppose
it's,
we could try.
It's really not. We could try something different. There was a study that came out last week from the Pew Research Center, and it found that when you break down people by religious group, and I'll include atheists in that mix just to make this easier, atheists are more likely to get the COVID vaccine than any religious group that they surveyed. 90% of atheists, and I'm not talking nuns, I'm talking specifically atheists, say they will definitely or probably get a vaccine for COVID or have at least gotten their first shot.
So
So
wait, just to be clear, this isn't who have gotten it or are qualified to get it. It's who's planning on getting it when their time comes. Okay.
That's right. Or they've already started that process.
Sure,
90%
sure.
of atheists. Compare that
That's
to 54% of white evangelicals who said the same thing.
Whoa. 54%? Yeah. That's it?
That's it. It's that low. I mean,
that's alarming.
That is the most anti-science of the big religious demographics. So, I mean, but I think that's kind of the thing. When you treat science as your enemy and your entire faith rests on rejecting science,
right.
No matter how much some Christians would like to tell you, no, we're very scientific. That's why we believe the book of Genesis, like
right.
I am. Like, what else do you expect?
I'm curious about what the anti-vax movement is going to look like post-COVID, because assuming what is happening already is going to continue happening, that we're going to roll out the vaccine, there's going to be very few, you know, low side effects or complications with getting the vaccine, and then all of a sudden we can go back to normal.
Vaccines work. We're going to find that out.
We're going to watch it work in real time. It's not like
right.
showing somebody like the evolution of smallpox and how it went out or like when polio died
right.
out. It's
right.
going to be like a lot of people were sick and lots of people died. And now they're not as much so much right now. So like
yeah.
I'm very, very, very curious about how that movement is going to look moving forward, because I can't imagine if this vaccine continues to be as successful as it has been thus far, I can't imagine there's going to be a big market for like anti-vaxxers anymore.
I think what you'll see happen is, one, if there's any health epidemic in the future, they're going to blame it on this vaccine. I also think they'll just specify like maybe the COVID vaccine was one thing, but the next vaccine or the other ones are the ones with the microchips that'll get you.
But I feel
so
vintage anti-vaxxers, like pre-microchip anti-vaxxers were like, oh, vaccines are, I guess their whole thing was like the rushed, quote unquote, rushed vaccination schedule for babies. I guess that's kind of
right.
their
as opposed to the ones for
keystone.
Adults. So
okay.
It's not like I've heard Jenny McCarthy speak out against this particular one or the Gwyneth Paltrow crowd.
Right.
Just to give you some more numbers on the Pew Research one, 90% of atheists say they definitely or probably will get the vaccine. Only 10% say they will definitely or probably not get a vaccine, which is dumb. But again, we always know there's like a small handful of atheists who are very stupid. So that's 10%.
Yes.
Compare that to 45% of white evangelicals who say they will probably or definitely not get a vaccine. Those numbers are almost certainly going to go down as people start seeing it working. And the ones who are on the fence start realizing, okay, fine, I'll do it.
Right.
Like, it's one thing to take a survey before people have their vaccines and are eligible for it, but once it give it another month or two, I suspect you're going to see very small numbers who are like, nope, I'm against it.
Oh, boy.
Also, I can't fly on a plane anymore.
Yeah, are these going to be people who are, like, actually against it, or people who just simply cannot be bothered to make an appointment?
They specifically said, I'm not going to get it, so we'll see. I think it's worth pointing out that atheists specifically are the best demographic group for in terms of, yeah, we trust the science. We're going to get our shot the second we can get it. I should say 20% of atheists said they received at least one dose already. And another 70% said, all right, I don't have it yet, but I will as soon as I can. So that's where the 90% is coming from.
Right.
So, hey, some good news to start things off.
Yeah, this is very exciting. And, Hemant, I'm very excited to say we are soon going to be able to go back to in-person recording, and I am so excited about it.
I'm debating it. I'm debating it.
What?
Do I want to see you in person?
Oh, Hemant! I need to interact with another human who's not husband or my stupid dog.
I sympathize with that, and that is a good reason to continue in-person things.
The new CDC...
And also, we get rid of the lag. I hate this stupid Zoom / Squadcast lag.
No, it's the pits. But also, like, the latest research, the CDC is now saying that, like, I can come to your house even if your wife and kids aren't vaccinated and we're all relatively safe,
right.
and vice versa. So once we're both fully vaccinated, we
party
can just
at our houses.
Yeah, we can just go to each other's houses for a while, just be somewhere that's not my own house. I suggest
everyone just goes to someone else's house. You don't need an invite anymore.
Well, I mean,
just
legally, if I knock
find
on your
a neighbor,
door. Yeah, if I knock on your door and tell you I'm fully vaccinated, you have to let me hang out with you.
That's the law now.
It's the law.
Thank you, Biden.
So, yeah.
Let's talk about true crime drama. This one amused me. Yeah. This story is
finally something I'm interested in, Hemant. Jesus.
Yeah. There is a real estate agent in Missouri, Lee Ann Bowman. She was arrested last week because, as the story goes, she had asked a woman, hey, I need you to, like, murder my ex-mother-in-law. She's divorced. She said, I want you to kill my mother-in-law because I think she was afraid that during their custody battle, the mother-in-law was going to get custody of the kids for her son, the ex. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she's like, I need you to off her. And this woman she told this to is like, that's weird. I don't know why you're telling me that. And she's like, but seriously, can you kill her and not let anyone find out and make it look like an accident?
Oh, no.
And the friend who eventually went to the police with this, I don't know who this woman is. I really want to know. But she's like, aren't you Christian? To which Bowman, and this is the reason I bring this up, Bowman said, this is according to the Washington Post story about this, pressed about whether she was serious, Bowman said she, quote, knew it was wrong as a Christian, but she would go to church and ask for forgiveness after it was done. She had an out.
Found the loophole.
She did. I want to talk about that loophole. For what it's worth, she offered the friend $1,500, which I think, I don't really know the going rate for a hit.
That's not enough.
But that's not enough. But
in my research, it's closer to like $20,000 or so, but, you know.
Good
but also,
know.
We live in a pretty affluent part of the country, and so, like, you know, price of living is a little bit higher. So I'm sure, your mileage may vary depending on where you are.
I looked up what church she goes to, and I found a source that says she goes to a place called Lake Christian Church in Lake Ozark, Missouri. And so I went to their website. I went to their Facebook page, and I'm like, what have they said about her? And obviously, they've said nothing about this over the past week or two since this story broke. But I did find a posting they made on Facebook where they publicized her baptism last November, and this is from November 10th, 2020, as in like 4 months ago, and it says, Leanne Bellman was baptized into the faith at our church on Sunday. The video was taken down, which doesn't surprise me because I got to it late, but the Facebook post was up there. And when I looked about an hour later after I took a screenshot, thankfully, the post was gone. So they want to be like, well, we don't know her. Don't look at us.
So it's not just that she's a Christian. She's like a brand new baby Christian.
It's almost like, and I can't confirm this, it's almost like she wanted to become a Christian and then go through with the hit to get absolved. Like,
that's very
I don't
funny.
Know if that's the timeline, but it sure fits.
I just want to triple check with you, Hemant. Yeah. You said this takes place in the Ozark and it's about a murder hit. Are you just watching the Netflix series Ozarks and getting confused again?
I don't know what series you are talking about.
It's literally
so
called
I'm gonna
Ozark.
Guess
what it's about.
Is it about a murder at the Ozark?
It's about crime around the Ozarks. It's very
I assume
good.
Everything on Netflix is a murder of some sort.
I you know what? I think that'll do you well in life. I think that's a fair yeah. a fair judgment
so,
to make.
Let's talk about this loophole though, because
yeah.
I here's what I think most Christians would tell you. It doesn't count if you, you know, quote unquote, find God just to absolve your sins. It only mm-hmm. matters if you really, truly repent, in which mm-hmm. case, sure, God will forgive you. But obviously, at some point, that messaging doesn't get through to a lot of people because there's a reason you keep hearing, like, I don't know, murderers, prisoners who always include God as part of their redemption story, or like me-too'd people who are like, yes, I have found God and now I'm a better person. It's part of the plan. Jerry Falwell Jr. is going to re-find God again sometime in the next year before he goes on his apology tour, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But this woman who... I don't know how long she's been in church, despite being baptized.
Since November.
But she clearly thought that, like, don't worry, all I have to do is, I don't know, I know it's not that type of church, but she's like, if I just say some Hail Marys, I'll be good.
You're right.
She assumed along the line, yep, I'm good now. Christianity gives me the bandage to just cover up anything I do. By the way, I have $1,500. Who wants it?
I mean, and it really does... It really does kind of shine a light on the whole, like, your morality comes from your religion, because it, if this is how y'all do, I don't think that's correct. I don't think your morality does come from your religion. I think your excuses do.
Yeah. And I want to do a update for people who are listening. We have a little bit of an update on a guy we talked about last week, Cyten Bruggenkate. He is the presuppositionalist apologist, like, the type of Christian apologist who says, if the Bible says it, not only is it true, but if it's not in the Bible, like, there's a real...
Oh, yes, 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 I remember this
person. It's totally false. Uh-huh. Everything we know comes from the Bible because it's true. How do we know it's true? Because the Bible says it's true. That sort of thinking.
Yeah.
Last week, he said he's just shutting down his ministry out of nowhere, and he said he had committed some sort of moral failure, and then he just said nothing else. And it's like, dude, what did you do? Because that's a very vague thing to say. Are we talking about something illegal? Are we talking, like, a child? Are we talking about another man? What's the deal? And his church, like, someone had reported that it involved a woman at his church, and then the elders at Bruggenkate's church are like, it's not a woman in our church. So, like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
Well, this week, the two of the pastors at Faith Presbyterian Church in Ontario, which is, like, the pastors who are now overseeing this guy, they released a short statement this week. I'm going to read you the relevant portion of it, because this is all it said. Following admissions by Cyten Bruggenkate of fornication with a vulnerable woman, and following a formal complaint with evidence by the woman concerning the particular admissions given by Cy, the session has begun a full and thorough investigation, blah, 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 blah.
No.
I cannot... That still leaves so many unanswered questions for me. Like, okay, you slept with someone. I don't know if that was not consensual. I can't really tell. I can't tell what her situation is or his.
Vulnerable is a pretty vague term, right? Like,
yeah.
It could mean, like, she's just emotionally delicate, or she, like, straight up couldn't say no. Like, that's, yeah, that's not a good start.
Fornication is also vague because it doesn't necessarily mean it was consensual or not. And I can't tell from that statement how they want, like, they gave the most clinical way of saying that that actually leaves more questions than not. But I guess it doesn't seem like it's a crime. I'll add one more wrinkle to this. A reporter named Jackson Elliott contacted those elders at the church, and they told him that they said he admitted to doing this, right? That admission came only, quote, after someone threatened to make Bruggenkate's sin public. Someone was going to out him, and he's like, nope, I'm going to post something now and out myself. And we are, according to the reporter, we're not talking about the vulnerable woman. She's not the one who was going to out him. Someone else was going to do it. There's another person in this story who we don't know who it is. Whether it's connected to this woman, I don't know. I mean, I have so many more questions, and none of them are going to be answered.
Yeah, do you think we'll ever find out the whole story? Do you think it's just one of those lost to time kind of things?
You know what? I don't think he's famous enough to warrant that we're gonna get the whole story at some point.
Sure.
I wish we could. I also, like, in other situations, I'd say, you know what, nobody else's business. He did something wrong. He's dealing with it. Whoever is involved in the story needs to be involved in the story and not the rest of us. But because he's a public figure, because he's the sort of person who says, follow my religion, otherwise you have no morality.
Right.
Like, I do want to know more details. I don't know if the church's investigation, which they say they're conducting, one, I don't know how legit it's going to be, but also I don't know that they're going to make it public, which is also troubling, because when a church says we're doing the investigation, that's like the Catholic Church saying, no, don't worry, we're looking into this allegation. You can't trust them.
Yeah.
They haven't earned that trust.
Yeah. There's a reason that we shouldn't probably allow churches to, like, literally police themselves. It's because maybe they're, you know, going to cover their own ass instead of help people. Unclear.
Yeah. I got one more fun one for you, and then we can go on to some more heavy ones. This just came out today, and I was super excited by it. Two researchers just published a study. Samuel Perry and Andrew Whitehead are two sociologists. They just published a paper. I'm going to give you the real title of it, and you tell me what it means. Its title is Linking Evangelical Subculture and Phallically Insecure Masculinity Using Google Searches for Male Enhancement.
This is the best day of my life.
So what
you're telling me is that they figured out whether or not evangelical men are especially insecure about the size of their penis because those people tend to search or click on penis enhancement enlargement links. And
close.
So that's,
That's pretty close.
You tell me.
Here's what they actually did. They said, look, if we did a survey and we said, you know, are you looking for a bigger penis? We're pretty sure people would lie to us. So we can't just rely on a survey.
Right.
But we figure people are not going to lie in terms of what they search for on Google. So let's use that as a proxy here.
Y'all, incognito mode, get on it.
So what they did is they looked at two numbers. They said there is one set of there's some data that shows how many evangelicals exist in every state per 1,000 people. Alabama, for example, has about 420 evangelicals per 1,000 people, according to some data. Other states vary, obviously. So they use that number to say, how evangelical is your state? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Then they said, what about Google Trends, which is a figure of what people are searching for at any given time? If it's 100, like, it's super popular. It's as popular as it's ever going to get versus 50, which is 50% as popular. I hope I'm getting that right. And then they said, all right, well, let's link up what people are searching for in terms of male enhancement, penis pump, Extends, which is the drug you can supposedly get to do this stuff.
Oh, you can get it at gas stations. Don't worry.
Oh, really? Okay. And so they looked up what's the connection between the states that have more evangelicals, in preponderance, uh-huh. versus the number of these Google search results. And what they found is, yep, it's going up. Like, the more Ooh, boy. Evangelicals in your state, the more likely you are to search for this terminology. I'll get into the limitations in a second, but here's what they wrote. Scholars argue this effort... Oh, I'm sorry. I should explain this a little bit. They basically say that, look, we know you... When you look at the data, we don't know who's searching for this stuff on Google.
Sure.
It could be these guys' wives. It could be other people. But we're saying in the states where there are a ton of evangelicals, this is what they're searching for more than others. So they're like, we're not saying we know evangelicals are searching for this stuff. But certainly when you have a lot of Christian evangelicals in a state, it affects the culture. And also, like, a lot of these evangelical churches do a lot to promote, like, men's retreats. And if you've ever seen ads for this, and my God, go look it up. It's like, Sunday, come watch the monster trucks and a wrestling match. Get your guns, and we're going to bond as men. And it's like, these are church retreats where they hype up this traditional notion of masculinity. And so if that's what you're raised in, you're going to have a lot of guys who are like, oh no, I have to be a better man, so I need a bigger dick.
Right.
And so they're basically...
Because Christians don't understand metaphors.
And so they're basically saying, at minimum, a higher prevalence of searches for male enhancement terms, mean men in that region not only feel that having a larger penis is important, but that their penis does not measure up. This is perhaps the very archetype of masculine insecurity. Mm-hmm. Again, they are freely admitting we don't know for sure who's looking up this stuff or why they're looking up this stuff. We're just saying there's a connection, but also
they found a pattern and
we found a pattern, and also the headlines are hilarious. And they say in the discussion aspect, the discussion part of their paper, they point out one possible consequence of this kind of thinking. It creates a subculture in which men not only elevate embodied measures of masculinity, but in which many men feel they are inadequate compared to the standard, is a subculture that may indirectly encourage abuse. Because, you know, you have to be a man, and that might mean ignoring women and ignoring their wishes and the things they rightfully complain about. So they're saying,
I mean, this is just the definition of toxic masculinity. If we wanted a dictionary definition of it, this is what we're looking at. And so the problem is when you tell men that being quote unquote manly is the end all be all, right? Like, this is your platonic ideal of who you are, is to be this like ultra manly man. And part of that apparently is having a big schlong. And if they don't have that, many people are going to A, feel inadequate, and B, look for their masculinity to be affirmed in other ways. And unfortunately, that often means exerting control over the women or children in their life. And that's how you get from my dick isn't big to I hit my wife. It's because they are told that the only way to be a man is to be ultra masculine. And if you don't have like a dick to wield around, you're going to try to obtain your masculinity in other ways. And that may be verbally or physically abusing people. It may be harassing women on the street. It's just, toxic masculinity is a hell of a drug.
And I am not the first person to say this. I'm not taking credit, but if you're looking for big dicks, you're going to find a ton of them in churches. Do you want to talk about Clay Higgins?
Who's Clay Higgins?
Clay Higgins is the Louisiana congressman who gave a speech this week on the House floor about gun control. That is correct.
He is
against guns. Just so you all know, the Democratic-controlled House passed a bill this week basically calling for extended background checks for gun sales. It's like the bare minimum you could do to make sure guns don't get in the wrong hands. Mm-hmm. And in the past, under Trump, Democrats passed like the same bill, but Mitch McConnell wouldn't allow senators to vote on it. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it'll get a vote, but maybe Republicans will filibuster it. We don't know. But it did pass the House. Before it passed... a Republican from Louisiana, Clay Higgins, got on the House floor and spoke out against it because he said, we don't need background checks for gun safety like this. And do you want to talk about what his reason was for why we don't need this bill?
So he essentially he said that because there aren't gun checks in the Bible, there shouldn't be gun checks here. He said, quote, there's a higher authority than the law of man. Above the speaker's podium are the words in this great chamber and God we trust. Do we? So that's one good reason to get rid of that. Do we recognize that the biblical record is replete with the violence of man? Shall we admit, shall my colleagues on the other side of the aisle admit that laws designed to restrict the Second Amendment, restrict Second Amendment rights and freedoms are but a veil to conceal the violence of man born since Adam. Firstborn son of Adam killed his brother in a violent rage. I'm rather certain he did not use a firearm. The Second Amendment protections that we have as American citizens shall not be infringed. Remember those words that they are born of a nation that recognized our service to our Lord.
So Cain killed Abel in a violent rage. I believe he stoned him. And therefore, I mean, I think the point he's trying to make is that we've always been violent. So if you're trying to do gun safety measures to stop violence, it ain't going to happen because the Bible says we are a violent people. You can't hide the violence.
Yeah, I mean, but if I was given my druthers, if somebody was really mad at me, I would rather them punch me in the face than shoot me in the face. But that's me. Like, I'm a crazy person. I'm just so kooky.
Someone has said many, I mean, people have said before, like, you know, you could also kill people with a knife. First of all, you can't kill like hundreds of people with one knife unless you're a, I don't know, good ninja, I guess.
Wow.
But again,
it.
The idea that we're a violent people, therefore you shouldn't take any safety precautions is to me just broken brain Republican thinking. Like, you could argue humans are risk takers. Why wear a seatbelt? Why make cars make you wear a seatbelt? Why have helmets? I mean, who cares?
It's such a specious argument anyway, because they know. Because the problem with the Republicans is that when it comes to guns and stuff like that, it's very much like no matter how many laws you pass, you can't stop people from being violent. But anything that's like, you know, abortion rights, they're like,
violence.
Well, we have to put a stop to that. It's just like, well, wait, I thought no matter what, people are going to find a way to hurt each other. But it's just the worst. These people are the fucking pits.
Like, at least he was outnumbered, which is nice. But leave it to this guy to say, look, the Bible has violence in it. That proves we're violent. Therefore, you're not going to stop violence. Therefore, why are we here? That's his whole line of thinking.
Well, and the thing is, I think it's a stupid argument. But, like, it's not a terrible argument if he just, like, made the straightforward, listen, people are violent. Nothing we legislate here is going to keep people from hurting each other. I don't agree with that, but at least that's a relatively, like, sound argument. But to bring the Bible into it needlessly is just so appropriate for these idiots.
Couldn't we also argue Cain didn't kill his brother with a gun, therefore we shouldn't need guns either? Like, if I made that argument on the House floor or something, they would be very mad about it, I assume.
Yeah, but if Abel had a gun, maybe Cain would never have slew
the Bible.
What's the past tense of slew? Would never have slewn him.
Sloon. Sure.
Boy, oh boy. This is stupid. They're idiots. I don't think we should ever listen to them again about anything.
By the way, Clay, I like it. Clay Higgins once said any Muslim suspected of being radicalized should be killed. He also said he knows we're losing our freedoms, and he knows this because his wife had a dream, and she has the gift of premonition.
Oh, no.
He was also one of only five members of the House to reject a resolution committing to a peaceful transfer of power after the 2020 election. He's been reelected.
Cool and regular and sane and stable.
heavily red district. He won by a landslide in the last election.
But you know what? Like, these are the reasons that elections matter and that we need to be invested in them. Because, like, you know, a couple of years ago, when the House, when the Republicans had the House, we would have had to listen to this guy, and all the Republicans would have been like, that's a very good point, sir. I agree with him. And, like, they would have voted it down because of this really salient Bible point. So yeah. Elections matter. We should try to keep the House in 2022. How about that?
Should try. Maybe. It won't happen, but we'll
see. Shut the fuck up, Hammond. We don't need this right now. It's sunny.
They're going to redistrict it.
We just need a little tiny optimism.
Democrats have like another year to get shit done if whatever they can do. You'll enjoy this as well. There is a church in Tennessee, the West Sparta Church of Christ, and I guess they had a member they were not happy with, so they sent her a physical letter, which is always a dumb idea in the age of social media. But what they said is, we fear that you are no longer convinced in the need to assemble with the church for which Christ died. They said that because she stopped attending church for a few weeks, which we're in the middle of a pandemic. Why would you be going to church in person anyway? But they were like, why aren't you here? Yeah. Do you not think you need us? And then they went on. I'm going to read you this paragraph. This failure to assemble is not the only problem that you must address. We have been informed and understand that you have a living arrangement that is not biblical and must be terminated immediately. I don't know what that means. Is she living with a same-sex partner? Like a guy she's not married to? I don't know.
Wait,
but
do we
she's
know?
Doing... We don't. I don't know who this lady is.
Oh.
I haven't been able to figure that out yet. I've tried. But she's apparently living with someone, and then someone snitched on her. And what
these motherfuckers, it's like prison in churches.
And they said at the end, if these issues are not corrected and public repentance made by February 21st, which is when this letter was posted on Facebook the next day, I think.
Whoopsie.
If you don't do this, we will withdraw fellowship, which is a weird threat to make against someone who clearly doesn't give a shit about you.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, it's like saying, it's either your partner or us. Well, I'm picking my partner. I don't even like you guys. Like, take the fucking hint. Like, that's not how any of this works. Oh, Jesus.
I don't get the threat. And then the church.
I'm dying of curiosity to know who this is.
I am too. A couple of weeks ago, like the day or two after this image of someone holding the letter went viral, the church tried to respond on Facebook, and then they deleted it quickly. But one of the things they said is, we are deeply saddened that something that was supposed to be a private matter has become subject to public confusion. But here's their justification for what they wrote.
Snitches get stitches.
They basically said, this is their justification for the letter. When you love someone, sometimes that means doing the right thing, no matter how harsh or extremely difficult it may seem. For example, if you have a loved one that is headed down a path dangerous to their own health, you would do anything to help them, even if that meant cutting them off financially, personally, emotionally, etc. Like, that's abuse at some point there. Like, they telling them, we're going to cut you off financially. Why? What did she do wrong? Well, she stopped coming to church in the middle of a pandemic. She's apparently, I don't even know her financial situation. Maybe she's living with a guy because she can't afford to live on her own. We don't know. But their response is, yep, we're going to cut you off. And if you suffer, well, we've talked about Jehovah's Witnesses who disfellowship people. Like, they're serious. Their method to deal with Jehovah's Witnesses who say, I don't believe in this anymore, and who have publicly said, I'm leaving the church. Their response is, well, anyone in your family is going to cut you off for good. And we hope that that isolation, because they're not allowed to even talk to you anymore, we hope that that pressures you into coming back. And like as many ex-Jehovah's Witnesses will tell you, like, it's a form of whatever, mental cruelty, mental abuse to do that to someone. Well, like, I have a child. My mom, the child's grandmother, like, can't see the child anymore. And the grandmother's thinking as well, the church told me I'm not allowed to. What do you want me to do? But it's also
It's a really common thing. Usually we see it more regularly in like full on cults. Isolating people from those they love is a super common way to emotionally manipulate people and abuse them, because if they think that leaving this church or this cult or this group or this house, if they think that means they will lose everything, then they will put up with your garbage as long as they need to. It's really, really, really fucked. And now I'm very curious to see how common this is. You know, like, do a lot of people
like
get these weird letters?
Yeah, it seems like it is pretty common, because this is not the first time I've written about a church sending a crazy ass letter like this to somebody. It happens a lot in certain denominations too, especially when they're like super conservative and they really do control your life. So yeah, they send letters like this, and the church has currently, they've taken down their social media. Basically, they don't want people contacting them. Their Yelp reviews suck as of this writing. But
nobody's above bad Yelp reviews, even God.
At some point, I feel like I'm still trying to figure out who this woman is. I want to talk to her. I want to see what the deal is. I want to see if she left the church. I hope she wasn't swayed by the letter. And the only reason it became social media fodder is because she's like, you've got to be kidding me.
This,
I hope that's
the story. It does feel like it's the beginning of like a cool 2020 episode, where it's like, she was kicked out of church for being a single mom, and now she's, I don't know, a business lady or whatever, however we define success. Anyway, can I talk about a thing?
Wait, before you do it, I'm going to give a shout out to our sponsor.
Oh, you're lucky.
Our sponsor is Stardust Science, which was founded by 15-year-old activist and author Bailey Harris. When Bailey was younger, she was watching Cosmos on TV, and Neil deGrasse Tyson talked about how everything in the universe, the planets, the stars, the galaxies, even us, we all come from the same star stuff. And that concept was so exciting to her that she wanted to share it with her friends, and so she ended up writing a book called My Name is Stardust, and a special edition of the book is now out. It has a foreword by Richard Dawkins. It has beautiful artwork. It talks about evolution and science and the universe, and it looks amazing. If you go to stardustscience.com, use the code FRIENDLYATHEIST, one word, for 10% off, and we'll have a link in the show notes as well. So thank you to Stardust Science for sponsoring this episode. What do you want to talk about?
I would like to talk about Arizona. I like to hop over to Arizona when they're doing something especially egregious. So we have seen a slew in the year of our Lord 2021 of governors just being literal idiots. And this time around, we have a whole House of Representatives that are being absurd. So HB 2648 is a piece of legislation that Phoenix Republicans obviously are trying to get through that would say that religious services are immune from future shutdowns. So if a COVID or COVID-like disease ever happens again, that we have to self-isolate, shut down public works, things like that, these fine folks in Arizona want to make sure that churches are exempt from that, because everybody knows COVID can't spread in a church because of holy water, question mark?
Yeah, there's actually several states doing something like this, and the justification the Republicans are saying is, look, if you want to shut down everything and treat us the same way, that's okay. But if you're not going to, we deserve to be treated the way the state treats grocery stores. If you're going to keep them open, then you got to keep us open because we're an essential service.
Right.
Of course, they miss the obvious differences, which is we literally physically need groceries, food, water. When you go to a grocery store, they can force you to wear a mask, first of all. They can also make sure you're not going there to hang out with your friends. You're going there to get what you need, not talk to anybody, leave quickly. Whereas churches, you are singing, you are standing next to people, you are literally like worshiping as a group. There's a substantive difference. And what this bill and others like it are saying are that, nope, we're not different from anything else. We can't tell the difference. So you got to treat us no differently. Well, and that's only part of the problem.
Right. Well, and they use this sort of tactic of like, oh, well, liquor stores are open and dispensaries are open, but God is canceled or whatever. And I think it's important to delineate. It's not that dispensaries are absolutely essential to people living or liquor stores or whatever, but when you go to a dispensary, when you go to a liquor store, when you go to a grocery store, your goal is to get in and out as quickly as possible, buy the things you need, and get back to your house. The point of a church is literally to stay there for at least an hour. That's right. That's the thing. It's not that God is less important than weed or whatever, although I would make that argument for sure.
We've talked about this before, because even those liquor stores and dispensaries, for people who either have alcohol dependency or something like that, which as a medical condition, depriving them of being able to go there will create a lot of other medical issues, which is what states want to avoid. So there's actually like a actually complicated reason those liquor stores are open in some part, in some states and some cities. But again, this sort of nuance, none of these Republicans seem to care about that. They just want to find a way to keep churches open during the next pandemic, as if you allow anything to be open, you got to allow churches to be open. But this bill in Arizona is particularly awful. And it's not the only one, because the way it's worded, the state couldn't go after churches or any religious institution for like anything. You can't fine them. You can't punish churches for doing anything wrong. The way it's worded, if a church was guilty of like child abuse within its walls, the state couldn't go after them either. And the Republicans are like, that's totally not what we meant. Doesn't matter. Right. It's what the bill says. And there are Democrats in Arizona who are pointing that out. One of them, who's an awesome progressive, who I really like, Melody Hernandez, said, there is currently a long-term worldwide scandal about sexual abuse of children in religious organizations, and this has resulted in many fines, fees, penalties, and criminal sanctions, I am incredibly concerned that this bill's prohibition would deny children victims any recompense for their abuse, which is, that's what it could do. And so unless, I don't know if this bill is going to pass. I don't know that it would survive a legal challenge, but it's scary to think that these Republicans have learned absolutely nothing from a year of the pandemic. I don't know whether they are willfully ignorant about the difference between a grocery store and a church, but they're acting like it.
Yeah, and that's why I brought up the liquor store thing, because I think to some extent their grievances, while I don't agree with them, I understand why they are upset that liquor stores can be open but their church can't. Like, I get it, but all it takes is like 1 minute of thoughtful exploration of the topic and you can see the difference. Like, it's
squeeze it into your searches for a bigger penis and you will figure it out.
Oh, it's so upsetting.
Let's talk about Beth Moore.
Who's that? Yeah,
she is a Bible teacher. She's super popular. If you're a progressive Christian, if you're a Christian woman, you're probably very familiar with her. Sold millions of books, leads a pretty large ministry, and she's also been one of the people within the Southern Baptist movement who has spent the past 4 years pretty vocally calling out the bigotry of Donald Trump. At one point, John Piper, I believe, like super conservative minister, he even said of her, "Go home." That was like the whole tweet. Something
Jesus
like
Christ.
That. Like, again, like a vocal woman within the Southern Baptist dares to speak out against Trumpism, and it drives these men crazy. And so this, people have been asking her for years, like, why the hell are you still a Southern Baptist? Like, given all their issues. And she always said she believes in the SBC, Southern Baptist Convention. She believes in the mission work. She even doesn't have a problem with their legit stance on women not leading churches because the Bible says so. Because she's like, well, I don't run a church. I'm not speaking from the pulpit. I'm just teaching the Bible from my ministry. And that's to her, distinction with a difference.
Sure.
But anyway, this week she announced that she was leaving the Southern Baptist Convention. Mm-hmm. Like, still a Christian, still doing the stuff she does, but she cannot. She said, I can no longer identify with Southern Baptists. And that she's been working for years. Like, when she publishes her books, she does it through the Southern Baptist-owned Lifeway Christian Books, Lifeway Christian a publishing company. They're not going to publish her books anymore. Like, that's already made, too. So it's not just words. Like, this mm-hmm. affects her personally. But one of the reasons she said she's leaving isn't just the Trump stuff and the backlash. It's because the SBC is kind of like the home to racist Christians. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of high-profile black pastors have left the denomination, too. This, if you're looking, if you're, I haven't crunched any numbers on this, but I would guess if you have a list of all the people charged with the January 6th Capitol riots, you're going to find a bunch of Southern Baptists in there, too. And she's been frustrated by the racism in the SBC as well. And again, some of the leaders of the SBC are like, no, we want to do better. We are doing better with racism. And it's like, that's words. I see your actions. Mm-hmm. There's debates about, like, critical race theory, like stuff you hear on Tucker Carlson that are embroiling the church. It's like, listen, if you guys can't handle, like, adults, this racism thing, what are you doing there? And, okay, so I was thinking about this. If Beth Moore is walking away from Southern Baptist, what does that mean? Because I think a lot of atheists are like, who the hell cares? It's one prominent woman leaving the church. Who cares? I think that's almost the equivalent of who is like a popular Catholic in the public eye. Not like the Joe Pope, Biden. But I'm saying maybe Joe Biden. If Joe Biden, who is openly Catholic and generally well-liked by the American public, said, I can no longer be Catholic because I'm disturbed by what the church does. I'm still religious. I still believe in God. That would be pretty damn big of a deal. Or at least he's the president. That's a bigger deal. But like if Stephen Colbert, just a popular talk show host who openly talks about how he's a proud Catholic, despite making fun of the church all the time, if he walked away, it would be like, you just lost one of the best spokespeople you had going for you. Right. And that's what, to me, that's what I think this is equivalent to. Having someone who actually made Southern Baptists look better than they really are, saying, you know what, I'm done carrying your water for you. I'm leaving. Like, this is good for her. It is bad for the Southern Baptist because she was one of the people they could point to say, no, you should totally be a Southern Baptist. Look, she's one of us.
Yeah.
And she doesn't like us.
What do you think this says about the future of the Southern Baptist group? Because my guess would be that it's going to be not unlike the GOP, that it's just going to galvanize those who are left and make them more less inclined to change or be accepting of anybody who isn't them. Would you say that's
it makes them more homogenous. Like the stereotype of Southern Baptists is like white dudes who vote Republican, think the same way about all these issues.
And say the N-word in private.
Right, exactly. And they've done a lot. Like the leadership of the Southern Baptists I've seen them in articles over and over saying, we are trying to fix that. We are aware of the problem. We are taking these steps to try to change that. But when you lose black pastors repeatedly because you're too racist, when you lose Beth Moore because you guys are too racist, and because of all this, and like when you're losing the people who actually help you defy the stereotypes, that's not a good look. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm even saying the president of the SBC right now is not trying to make a change for the better.
Right.
But if you can't even keep these people in your fold, you're clearly not doing a good enough job. So you're right. I think it's a fair comparison to like the GOP. They exist. Maybe like Mitt Romney is your voice of reason, I guess, even though he's not. But if you lose someone like that, what are you left with? You're left with a base that no one else wants to be a part of, and that's bad for your long-term prospects.
Well, and it's necessarily going to continue to shrink who your party is, and because people have a habit of dying and retiring, where are you getting your new people from? Like, Tucker Carlson can only influence so many 20-year-old white guys to go be assholes. There's a finite number of them.
Yes, there are. Did you know creationism is back in the news? Like literal, actual, let's teach creationism in the classroom.
I thought we decided we weren't going to do that anymore because it's stupid.
We did. The Supreme Court says you literally cannot teach creationism. But Mary Bentley, a Republican state representative in Arkansas, has filed a bill. I'm going to read you the entire substantive part of the bill. She wants to revise the state code to say the following. A teacher of a kindergarten through grade 12 science class at a public school or open enrollment public charter school may teach creationism as a theory of how the earth came to exist. That's the whole bill. Like, that's pretty much it.
Well,
it's not mandating it. It's saying they can. You can teach creationism in science class if my bill passes. That's her bill.
Boy.
That's what she's doing with her time.
I don't even know what to say about this shit anymore. And for some reason, the thing that makes me the most angry is that they don't know what the word theory means in scientific parlance. I think maybe, genuinely, that is the thing that is going to send me to an early grave, is people using theory as if it means whatever the fuck they want it to mean.
It is a theory. It's a stupid theory. It's a discredited theory. She didn't include those words. I should say, Bentley tried doing this in 2017. At the time, she said, let's teach creationism and intelligence design.
Are different things?
Yeah. That bill went nowhere, even in Arkansas. But this bill doesn't even... I think she's trying to get around whatever failed last time by saying, I'm saying it's okay to teach creationism if you want to. Right. She is a graduate of Harding College, which is a Church of Christ-affiliated school, like super fundamentally type of college.
Uh-huh.
She's a friend of Jason Rapert, Arkansas also state senator, who, surprisingly to me, was not a co-sponsor of this bill.
Really?
In the Senate. Someone else is. Huh. But I don't know that it'll get anywhere. But again, the fact that this literally happened either today or yesterday, that someone in power, in politics, said, I'm going to file a bill to teach creationism at a time when we still can't even get back into school because it's unsafe. This is her priority.
The lack of priorities of these people is truly one of the wildest things I've ever seen. I'm just, oh my God. Like, I feel like that's how I'm feeling about all these like anti-trans bills that are going on in every single state. Like, aren't you guys busy? Like, don't you have shit to do? Because I haven't left my house in a fucking year. So I'm hoping y'all are doing something about that and making sure people can still, you know, eat every day like asshole. Like, don't y'all have shit to be worried about that isn't dumb?
Here's the problem. Because Democrats are competent at governing, at least in the like bare minimum sense, and they passed this big bill in Congress, they literally, if you watch Fox News, they have nothing to complain about when it comes to Biden. And also, Biden's a white guy. Like, it's not easy to go after him. And so they got to find stupid shit. So what is the past week? It's been Potato Head's penis. It's been like protect the Chinese caricature in a Dr. Seuss book no one's ever read.
Oh my God.
That's all they've got. So attacking trans people is...
You know what's the big thing that Fox is obsessing with right now is that Biden hasn't done a press conference since he's been president. Which I think is... I was talking to somebody about this, and I wish I remember who it was, or if they were a real person or just a random on the internet who I don't know personally. But... they made a point that it seems that the Fox News set was so used to how Trump did things, which was unless he was standing on a stage telling you what he was doing, you assumed he was doing fuck all because he wasn't. He was sitting at the Resolute desk drinking Diet Coke with his Coke button.
No, he's now making phone calls. He's busy all day. Sure.
He's writing in Sharpie on blank pieces of printer paper like a toddler.
Yeah. Or weather maps.
Right, exactly. But Joe Biden is working every day, and press conferences are not something you just like show up to do. Like, there's prep work that goes into it, and he has other shit to be doing right now. Like, you know, passing this bill that's going to put $1,400 in our pockets soon. So, anyway, I'm... loving the floundering that we're seeing on Fox News. Apparently, last night during Biden's speech, there was like a picture-in-picture of Tucker Carlson reacting, which I thought
live
was
reaction
fake.
Biden is talking.
I genuinely thought it was an Onion article at first.
Which is also weird because even if you're Fox News, like put Sean Hannity there, I don't understand. Tucker has one face. It's the look of like divide a number by zero, and it's that face. And it doesn't change.
And I'm also trying to hold in a fart.
Yeah, like there's no other reaction. That's the running joke about him during his regular show. Why would you just put it there and say, look, here's his live reaction? There's no reaction. It's just the look. Oh, my God. But I Joe Biden should do a press conference, but they're only saying that so they have something to complain about. And once he does it, they'll find something else to just pick on. Like, they don't care about the press conference. They don't have a question that they're not getting an answer for.
The GOP completely exists to be an opposition party. They have no stances besides undo what Democrats do or stop Democrats from doing whatever, which is why the last 4 years were so cuckoo bananas crazy, because like the people who are supposed to be the ones who are intellectually dishonestly disagreeing with everything are doing the exact opposite. And every garbage thing Trump said, they're like, yeah, absolutely. No. That's what I would have said, too. Definitely. For sure. That was a regular sentence that adults could say. And now they're just completely back on their grind, right? They're back on anything the left does, they're going to vilify and demonize, and their fucking audience eats it up. Unfortunately, they accidentally killed a lot of them during this coronavirus, so I'm not sure what their numbers are going to look like in the future, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. They're just the living worst is the problem with them. They're just the worst people on the planet. The worst.
Did you know heaven is a place where everyone works.
A place called Earth. Wait.
Yes.
What?
Heaven.
No.
You're going to work in heaven.
No. Absolutely not. If heaven is real, I am not going to just get into another late stage capitalist office job. I'm not going to do. I simply will not.
Oh, yes, you are, according
to
Pastor
heaven.
Robert Jeffress, which, by the way, he's amusing because Lou Dobbs got fired from Fox Business, and now he has nowhere to appear because he was on Lou Dobbs like friggin' every day. And now that his buddy has been fired, like Fox brings him on once a month, and he seems so grateful anyone cares. I know. So he was on regular Fox News this week, and Robert Jeffress, I'm sorry, I lied. He was on the Jim Baker show this week, and he said, I'm quoting here, we're going to work in heaven. We are also going to work in heaven. Now, that may sound more like hell to some people, ha ha ha, you know, working in heaven. But remember, God created us to be workers, .. But in heaven, all of the things that drain the joy out of our work, bodies that grow tired, strained relationships, government regulations, all those things will be removed and we're going to enjoy work like God intended us to enjoy it.
He really snuck in government regulations there, huh?
Yes, he did.
Never mind, government regulations tend to exist to protect workers, but what the fuck do
correct.
I know?
So heaven, according to my understanding of what Jeffress says, is like a giant Amazon warehouse where they don't even let you take your pee break.
Because you don't have to pee. They solved
that. But you
won't
have to. Yeah, they solved it. So yay, I guess. Like, I don't really understand why heaven is more appealing, knowing that.
Yeah, I mean, I get it in theory. Like, I think there are people who are happiest when they're working, and I think that's completely fair. Like, I think if I could do anything, I would like want to own a working ranch and be like, I enjoy doing the physical and mental work of like working with horses and cattle and things like that.
But without government regulations saying you can't abuse
my horses, yeah, no big deal.
Yeah.
But the problem is most of us have jobs that are not like intellectually and emotionally fulfilling in a way that we would choose to spend our days if we had no other options. Like, I think there are people who, if currency was abolished, I think there are definitely many, many people who would continue to work very frequently because it keeps them happy. They like what they do. They feel like they're contributing. But yeah, like you said, most people don't do that. Most people are factory workers or drivers or things that are not exactly fulfilling, which if you like it, God bless you. Like, go forth, do what you have to do. But most of us work because we have to work because we like to eat every day.
Jeffress, by the way, also opposes, I believe, higher minimum wage.
Oh, you don't fucking like, say. Call me shocked. I don't. It's this sort of like boner the right has for working is so dumb because it's just so obvious that there are more. We don't need everybody to work to keep society functioning. And instead of saying everybody needs to contribute, we should say, what does society need to be its best possible self? And if that is everyone working, fine. If it's not everybody working, maybe we like it's just. Oh, my God. Just the heart on the half of working is very annoying to me. Anyway,
I'm right there with you. I got one last one for you here, which is an update on the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. Even now, the ministries people, including his family members, his wife, his kids, they kind of are admitting, yeah, okay, daddy was a serial sexual predator. They announced this week they're going to rebrand to basically remove Ravi Zacharias from Ravi Zacharias International Ministries.
Whoops.
They've said we are in the process of taking down Ravi's content from our website and social media, including publications, videos, other forms of content, and we intend to change the name of the organization. Effective immediately, we are also discontinuing the use of the Zacharias Institute brand. Ooh. They also said we're going to basically change to a grant-giving organization. So instead of doing the stuff he did, like spreading Christian apologetics, they'll give money to groups that are doing good work, and that includes work that involves dealing with sexual abuse, which, all right, fine. And I think, okay, a couple thoughts about this. One is, that's good. They should change, like, his name is toxic. Mm-hmm. They're recognizing that. That's what they should do. They should get rid of his stuff because it's like watching a Bill Cosby show at this point. Like,
right. It's cringy.
You can't do that in good faith anymore. And even the work, if it's associated with him, that's not good. So they're getting rid of that. Again, this is a multi-million dollar a year ministry. They take in a lot of money. They could shut down and close those money spigots altogether. And again, I'm debating, should they have just done that? And I think their argument is...
Yeah, how many people are depending on it for work, though?
A lot of them have left. I don't know how many more people are leave. I mean, again, should you keep a ministry like that running for the sake of the good people who were working there because they believed in the mission? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But also, you don't need multi-million dollars a year to keep it going. I think the problem with a ministry like this is you have a lot of old people that just made a habit of giving to the ministry.
Oh, sure.
And so just by rebranding, you get to keep those checks rolling in to the place. And you can keep on some staff, I guess, and you can end up just changing the nature of what you do. Mm-hmm. I guess the debate I'm having in my head is, should they have just shut it down and told everybody, look, we did some bad things. We're just going to end this, and we will all have to find new work because whatever we were doing was not working.
Yeah,
they're not doing that. They're going to keep it going.
I don't think that would have been a bad idea at all. I think with what they have, they could have said, okay, we're doing severance packages, and I'm sure a spinoff of the thing will exist in some form. You know, people will start off a new ministry that does the same thing, but without that sort of toxic name attached to it. I think that probably would have been the smarter thing to do, but I also don't know, obviously, anything about, like, their finances and things like that, and maybe that wouldn't be possible. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it was a great idea for them to keep going. Do you think? I mean, so like,
I can't decide. I don't have a firm opinion on this, whether they should have shut down or keep going and just do better things under the ministry's name.
They would have to rebrand for sure. I mean, it's just kind of like if one of us left this show, would we just keep doing it and keep calling it the Friendly Atheist Podcast? Like, is it even the thing if the guy whose name is attached to it?
It's a very Ship of Theseus paradox.
Exactly. God, that's the second time that's come up this week, Hammett. What the fuck? That's really
it's the
weird.
It's the only connection I know.
Philosophy just, paradox you know of?
Yeah, exactly. So I must bring it up in every conversation to seem smart. That's how it works.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when you know only also, one really thing, you have to shove it into every conversation.
Oh, 100%. I'm really sorry if this podcast is going to come out like weird and stilted because this connection is fucking terrible today.
We'll be meeting in person soon enough.
Oh, I'm so excited. So I want to talk about Switzerland, and usually when we bring up Switzerland, it's generally pretty positive in terms of just how their politics work. This one is kind of a bummer. So this past Sunday, Swiss voters approved a proposition that bans facial coverings in public, which is the timing of this bill is quite wild considering we're all still wearing masks in public. But anyway, specifically, it is being known slangly as a burqa ban because it's not about people with surgical masks on to protect themselves or protect others. What they're quote unquote concerned about are women who wear burqas that cover their face in any way. This, like so many things that deal with women and women's clothing, it's being like what women choose to put on their body is being politicized, which sucks. And we can talk about whether or not burqas are quote unquote okay all you want. I have some feelings about it. Mine is basically like it is not the burqa comes from a position of anti-woman because the idea is you have to cover yourself in public, otherwise men will leer at you or hurt you or harm you. But I'm also a big proponent of I'm not going to tell somebody they can or cannot wear something. Like I don't think that's my place to do. However, in Switzerland, we have Marco Chiesa, C-H-I-E-S-A, Chiesa. They said that it is a strong symbol, this banning of burqas is a strong symbol in the fight against radical political Islam. Quote, the burqa creates a barrier between the person wearing it and the environment and thus prevents integration into society. So on the internet, we would call this concern trolling. That we are going to be critical and anti you, but pretend we're doing it for your own good. See also fat shaming. I'm just worried because you're overweight and I think you're going to have a heart attack. That's all I know about health. So I'm going to yell at you about it. What it really is I hate fat people and want you to feel bad about yourself all the time. Anyway, so obviously local Islamic people are not thrilled about it. The Islamic Central Council of Switzerland said that they were called the results Islamophobic. Quote, today's decision is tearing open old wounds, expanding the principle of legal inequality, and sending a clear signal of exclusion to the Muslim minority. And you know what's the kind of amazing cap off this is there are in Switzerland, there are 8.6 million Muslims, and researchers have found at most a few dozen women in Switzerland are wearing burqas. They passed this whole bill because a few dozen women choose to cover their face and body in public. And Switzerland was like, this far, no further. Like, it's truly the wildest misuse of time and energy I have heard in quite some time. Maybe since you told me about that creationism bill.
I'm right there with you. This affects virtually nobody. It, like you said, concern trolling. I have personal issues with the burqa because I feel like a lot of the women who have to wear it, who end up wearing it, really don't have a choice in the matter. But also, I have a bigger problem with politicians telling women what they can and cannot wear. Right. Especially when it's like a face covering at a time when everyone else is already wearing masks. Like, this doesn't actually keep anyone safe. This isn't about women's rights. This isn't about protecting women. This is just a way to stick it to like Muslims in a way that they think they can get popular support behind. And unfortunately it worked.
Yeah. The Islam is a really good scapegoat for whatever the fuck they're dealing with. So I am genuinely very disappointed in that happening. I don't know. Maybe I'm naive that I think Switzerland is like the end all be all of civilization or whatever. They make good clocks and knives and stuff. so excuse me. So anyway, that was a bummer. Quickly, we don't I don't know enough about it to dive too much into it, but the Equality Act is just passed through the House, so that's very exciting for us. So
that is good. It's not going to pass the Senate unless the bisexual senator from Arizona decides to care about the issue, which she won't.
Ooh. Kristen Sinema did a heel turn, the likes of which I have never seen. She went from being our, like, bisexual fuck Pence hero to that fucking down, thumbs down she did on the minimum wage hike. Yeah. Oh, boy, that sucked.
Yeah, she's not getting better. She's the one that hasn't talked about it. Joe Manchin has at least, like, talked about his opposition, and he seems to be open to some reform on the filibuster. Mm-hmm. But, I think the key here, if you're a Democrat, is start trying to pass bills that you can't do with reconciliation.
Right.
Start passing some bills and make her look bad.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't pass, you're going to have to start from scratch again, which you can do right now with some modifications or something. But basically, let her be the bad guy and make her pay a price for it.
Yeah, I am not comfortable with how much power Sinema and Joe Manchin have in the Senate. I'm not the only one, but whatever.
And again, Manchin is probably the only Democrat you could find in West Virginia who could get elected. Mm-hmm. Kristen Sinema is not the only Democrat you could find in Arizona who could get elected. So
correct.
She's not up for re-election for, I don't think she's up in 2022.
No, because she just got sworn in 2018, so she'll be 2024.
Yeah, so she's got a couple more years. So it's not like you could do much.
And so many GOP senators are not running for a new term. So I'm very, very, very interested to see if the Democrats can kind of scam some of those. Scam wasn't the right word, but grab some of those seats.
Yeah.
Or if they're going to be filled by like more Marjorie Taylor Greens, which is not super great. We didn't talk about it, but there's a lot of anti-trans bills are happening right now. They're genuinely too numerous to dive into, and it fucking sucks, and I hope that
it's the same deal. If you pass the Equality Act, it'll nullify a bunch of this stuff. If you pass the Voting Rights Act, it'll nullify a lot of the Republicans trying to stop black people from voting. But unless there's more pressure put on the weird moderate Democrats who don't want to do anything or who think Republicans are acting in good faith, which I don't know how you could be in the middle of politics and still be that ignorant to think Republicans are operating in good faith. Nothing's going to happen unless they realize the problem right in front of them. I've heard people say, look, right now, because of the reconciliation behind this COVID relief bill, there's nothing you could point to where you could say Republicans stop this from happening because of the filibuster. And so unless you start doing that stuff, it's not going to happen.
Right. There's also that Arkansas near total abortion ban, which I didn't bring up just because I feel like we've done this story every week for the last year. Basically, they're trying to ban all abortions in a way to get it up to the Supreme Court so they can take a chance at overturning Roe v. Wade with their conservative court. That's happening. We're aware of it. It's just we've talked about it way too much. Do you have any more stories?
I'm good. Yeah, that's it.
Before we go, have you seen the miniseries, docuseries Murder Among the Mormons?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. Well, good news. It's really fucking good. Better news. I am friends with one of the directors. His name's Tyler Meesom. He's actually been on this show before, like 2014, maybe 2013 even. He is one of the directors of An Honest Liar, which is the James Randi documentary, which to this day is maybe my favorite documentary of all time. I just find it so endlessly compelling. But he and, what's his partner's name? Can't remember. Who's the guy who directed Napoleon Dynamite, which is incredible.
Oh, God.
They did this three-part series called Murder Among the Mormons. And it's the whole thing, I think, is like 2 hours and 45. Huh?
Jared Hess.
Jared Hess. My husband yelled at me from upstairs. It's about 45 hours total. I would recommend watching it all in one sitting because they lay a lot of groundwork in the first episode and then it just like fucking pays off. Watch that. B, Tyler and I are trying to find a time to chat about it. So if you have watched it and have any questions or comments or concerns, especially if you're the whole thing is about bombings that happened in the 80s around in Utah surrounding the LDS church. And if you have any questions, concerns, thoughts that you'd like to convey to Tyler, especially if you have a background in the LDS church, that would be very cool. You can email us at friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com. And I think I'm going to be setting that up soon-ish. Also, I'm guesting on another podcast. We just said it. I'm going to wait until it's recorded before I talk about it. But a podcast more popular than ours has asked me to guest. So this is a big, fun deal for us. I think that's all I had to say. Oh, you're lucky this went long because I almost had a really long monologue about how the dictionary is bringing in supposedly in addition to supposedly and how that's actually a good thing in the way English language works. But I will spare you that. And I'm working on a PowerPoint. We'll do it later. But okay. I think everybody should be dictionary descriptivists instead of prescriptivists. Fight me. Hemant, where can we find you on the internet?
I am at friendlyatheist.com. I am at HemantMeta on Twitter. Go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support the show.
Mm-hmm. You can find me on Twitter at Jess Blumke.
We'll talk to you next week.